This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on the death penalty. I am joined by Senior Barrister Simon Spence QC from Red Lion Chambers in London. Simon has successfully prosecuted and defended numerous very high-profile and fatal violent offences for many years. His cases have included a number of highly complex matters which have attracted national and international media attention. Simon is ranked in the Legal 500 and in Chambers & Partners. Simon, it is a great pleasure, always a pleasure to see you. How are you today? Thank you for joining me.
I'm very well, thank you, and great pleasure to see you too.
Yes, indeed. The death penalty. And I was saying earlier, wasn't I, Simon, that we've marked this sort of USA because we will be doing a little bit of speak about it on the USA in particular.
Yes.
It may shock our listeners to hear that the death penalty, also referred to as capital punishment, is practiced in 55 countries worldwide and 27 states of America. Most recent death penalty statistics state that a total of 1,546 people have been executed in the US since 1976. And according to these statistics, 150 people have been wrongfully executed. Today, there are almost 2,500 convicts still on death row. In this episode, Simon and I will be discussing the crimes where the death penalty is used as punishment, the time lapses between sentencing and execution, and what those for and against the death penalty are saying in this modern day and age. And as always, much, much more. So, Simon, let's start by talking about the crimes that get the death penalty the most, please.
The obvious one, of course, is murder. That was the only offence, apart from treason and some military offences, that carried the death penalty in the UK until it was abolished in 1965. Historically, of course, if you go back in history, people were hanged for relatively minor offences. In the Middle Ages, if you stole a sheep, you could be hung for that, which is where the expression comes from, to be hung for a lamb as well as a goat. So if you look back in history, then there were many offences. And of course, in some other parts of the world, particularly in the Middle East and, is in Islamic countries, then they carry the death penalty for relatively minor offences. If you look further to the east, in Singapore, for example, a lot of drugs offences carry the death penalty because of Singapore's extremely hard approach to unlawful drugs.
Goodness.
But typically, of course, it's murder that people think of when they think of the death penalty. And the reason for that probably is because it goes back to the old idea of if you take a life, you are at risk of losing your own. And it's that rather sort of Old Testament approach, if I could put it that way, which justified it in the first place. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and so on.
Yes.
And that was the justification for the death penalty in this country, right up until it was abolished.
You said 1965. I know I'm starting to feel like a bit of a granny. I was telling you that before we pressed record. I said, look, I'm starting to find it hard for hearing. I'm going to snug up my earphones. But that doesn't seem that long ago. 1965 to me, and I could just hear sort of someone like my son, who's obviously much younger, going, oh, Mum, that was so long ago. But it doesn't feel that long ago to have abolished the death penalty in the UK. And I mean, espionage, treason, and death resulting from aircraft hijacking is also on the list for the
That's
USA,
right.
isn't it? I don't know about
absolutely.
Other countries.
And we were one of the earliest countries, in fact, to abolish the death penalty. France didn't get round to abolishing it until the 1970s. When you look at the statistics, some countries have abolished it only very recently. One interesting fact that I didn't know until I was researching this topic for us to talk about today was that it's actually a prerequisite of joining the European Union that you don't have the death penalty.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And yes, neither did I. And that's one of the criteria that any country has to meet before they can be considered to join the European Union.
Well, perhaps that's why France got rid of it in the 70s.
I'm sure it was, because it yes. would fit in with the creation of what was then, of course, the common market.
Yes.
It raises, of course, the interesting question, now that we're out of Europe, because there's quite a strong lobby of opinion to reintroduce the death penalty in this country.
Is there now? That's interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
Goodness yes. gracious, I didn't know. I wasn't aware of that.
So I don't know it'll ever happen. And the reason for that is perhaps an obvious one. The reason it was abolished in the first place, not only was it on moral grounds, but there was a practical reason, because juries, knowing that the death penalty would follow if they convicted somebody of murder, were finding any reason not to convict of murder and to convict of manslaughter or some other offence.
Yes.
And so there are a number of perverse acquittals simply because the jury either didn't approve of the death penalty or didn't want to have that responsibility hanging over them of finding somebody guilty who they knew was then at risk of losing their life.
I have to say, you know, as a juror, to sit there and think my vote is going to count whether that person, rightly or wrongly, should lose their lives, that's a lot of pressure on a juror, because jurors are everyday people.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not legally trained, and they're not, most of the time, people are not equipped to be under pressure as a juror. You're going about your daily life, you get called for jury service. I mean, we've got podcasts on jury service, and you go along, you have to go along, and if you're chosen, you have to become a juror.
That's right.
And then this pressure is put on you. But, absolutely. I mean, a survey carried out by Pew Research Center in April 21 said that 6 in 10 US adults strongly or somewhat favour the death penalty for convicted murders. And interestingly, the top two states with the most executions in America since 1976 seem to be Texas and Oklahoma. But yes. in your opinion, and I think this is linked to what we were just saying, does the death penalty, do you think, reduce crime in a country? I mean, did many people steal sheep then, since they were being hung for it in the UK, going back wherever?
The difficulty is, when you look at most murders, they are offences that occur on the spur of the moment, usually because of a set of given circumstances. And it's something that we've touched upon in previous podcasts in a different context when we were talking about the difference between murder and manslaughter.
Manslaughter, yes.
But if a crime occurs on the spur of the moment, then people aren't going to just pause and think, well, before I stick this knife in somebody, am I at risk of losing my own life? That's just not how the human brain works. And the fact that the death penalty remains in force in the United States clearly demonstrates that it doesn't have a deterrent effect, because their murder rate is one of the highest in the world.
And it's only gone up, right? But they don't have it in all states. I mean, I have to say, I don't know the statistics of the murder rates in the states that they do have the death penalty. Whether that's dropped or plateaued, I don't know. But you're right, they do have one of the highest, but then they've got, I mean, per capita, I don't know.
Yes, but what's quite apparent is that the presence of the death penalty in the United States clearly doesn't deter people from murdering.
Yes.
And I think that's true across the board. When you look at the statistics in this country, despite what a lot of people think, the number of murders that occur each year roughly averages out to the same each year. And if you look back in history at the statistics before the death penalty was abolished, as a proportion of the population, obviously the population of this country is a lot bigger now than it was back in the 1960s.
Yes.
But nevertheless, per capita, there aren't fewer or more murders being committed now than there were when we had the death penalty.
And that's a very interesting argument, isn't it, when you look at, does it actually reduce the amount of murders? Does it put people off? I mean, And if what you're saying stacks up, which I'm sure it does, then that's an astonishing statistic, really.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, because we're looking at per capita at that time, and even murder is murder, right? And
yes.
I get it. And again, I'd urge people to go and listen to our podcast that I did with you, Murder versus Manslaughter, because that's very interesting to look at, you know, how people end up being charged for manslaughter rather than murder. I mean, that was just a part one introductory. It obviously wasn't the whole topic in 25 minutes, but it is very interesting. But, I mean, how long does it take for a death penalty trial on average, Simon?
That's difficult to answer, really, because the length of the trial is going to be dictated by the complexity of the evidence rather than the ultimate sentence.
Yes.
And, of course, because we don't have the death penalty in this country...
Does it take? I guess the way we should think about it, does it take longer? It doesn't, does it? Because your sentence is part of the sentencing. It's
absolutely
not part
comes
of
at the end
trial.
Of the trial.
Yes,
that's right. I suspect if it were reintroduced in this country, then jury deliberation times would extend dramatically, for the reasons I've already touched upon. The rather more alarming statistic.
I know what you're going to say.
Is the average delay in the States
between
sentence and execution taking place.
Yes.
And the average delay is nearly 15 years.
Yes. I read it was 20.
Yeah.
There was some places reported...
Your statistic may be more up to date than mine.
Well, some places report it as 18, some places report it as 15, some places... And I just had to stare at that statistic and I thought, it cannot be right that from... The time you're sentenced to the actual date of execution, inmates on death row in the USA could wait around 20 years. That, I just find that astonishing.
It's primarily because of an extraordinarily complicated appeals process that the states have. But of course, they don't have any form of human rights legislation in the states, as we do here. Because although we've left Europe, we remain a signatory to the European Convention of Human Rights, which requires trials and indeed punishment after conviction to take place within a reasonable time period. The states don't have that. And so...
Do you think they'd benefit from introducing it? I mean, you'd think that because some of the things that have been asked on this topic, which is why we thought it was a good idea to do it, was that is it cheaper to imprison or execute? And much to the surprise of many who logically would assume that shortening someone's life should be cheaper than paying for it until its natural expiration, it turns out that it's actually 10 times cheaper to imprison someone for life than to go through the process of execution. Again, another astonishing fact that I read, and I thought, but how can that be? Now, I don't know whether it's because you go into a special sort of prison environment if you're on death row, to if you're an inmate, you know, amongst others that are just serving a jail sentence. But that can't be right. How have the Americans ended up with a 15 to 20 year gap between, you know, sentencing and actually, you know, having the execution? Look, I'm not sitting here saying it should be done the next day, don't get me wrong, but...
No, and of course that gives rise to another topic, which for me is the most compelling against having the death penalty, is the risk of getting it wrong. You know, in your
Indeed.
Introduction...
Indeed. Oh, the for and against, I tell you. I was battling, honestly, Simon, when we decided to do this podcast, I was battling in my head every argument I read for, I thought, yeah, that's right. And then every argument I read against, I thought, oh, no, that's got to be right.
There was actually quite a famous exchange between Priti Patel and Ian Hislop
on
Question Time about the death penalty, because Priti Patel was arguing in favour of it, and Ian Hislop was pointing out that if you execute the wrong people, that's not much of a deterrent. It's well worth watching, actually. You'll find it on YouTube. It's quite a famous clip. Mm. That's the difficulty. You know, if although we like to think the system is as good as possible, no criminal justice system is ever going to be 100% perfect.
No.
And as we all know,
there's been a lot of mistakes that have been made.
Miscarriages of justice.
Yes.
And particularly, for example, with the Guildford Four and the Birmingham Six.
Yes.
Now, bearing in mind the offences they were convicted of originally, had we had the death penalty, they would undoubtedly have received it. And then many years later, you discover that actually you've convicted completely innocent people. And for me, that is the main and the strongest argument against the death penalty, the risk of getting it wrong.
Well, I think that, you know, you sit there, and as I said, when you break it down and you look at simple arguments, not the complex arguments, you can really resonate with both, because there's lots of people that campaign for the death penalty to be banned, saying that it's a direct violation of the right to life. But we also hear arguments that the justice requires society to impose on criminals losses equal to those that have imposed on innocent persons.
Yes.
I don't think, I mean, that the USA is even close to banning the entire death penalty, sorry, across its 27 states. And bearing in mind, I think the first person that was executed was in 1608, when Captain George Kendall became the first man executed in the USA for being a spy for Spain. But I think what would be a very interesting statistic to try and get hold of, if it exists, is across the globe, so across these four, you know, countries, large number of countries where the death penalty still exists, 55 countries to be precise at the moment, what is the record of people being acquitted, if that's the right term to use, from the death penalty, i.e. they were wrongly accused, or even the level of crime, for example, it wasn't murder, it was manslaughter, or whatever it may be. I wonder if that kind of statistic even exists, because that would be so interesting.
Well, I'm sure it does somewhere. Somebody
we can find it, I'm sure, yes.
But of course, just because the death penalty exists doesn't necessarily mean that someone is going to be executed, because a lot of sentences are transposed and turned into imprisonment for life rather than the death penalty, even where it's available.
Ah, pause. And that happened, I need to know a bit more about
that. In this country.
So are you saying that if the death penalty was to be awarded, it could be that the judge would say, I will turn that into a life sentence, maybe after appeals and think, oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
And that happened in this country a lot. Towards the end of the time that we had the death penalty in the UK, particularly a lot of female prisoners, their sentences were commuted from execution to life imprisonment.
Whilst they were waiting on death row?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting.
And in fact, many years ago when I started at the bar, I prosecuted this rather timid old lady for shoplifting in Chelmsford. And she'd have been in her 60s, I suppose. And she had one previous conviction, which was for murder. And she'd been sentenced.
You said that lightly. You know, she only had one previous conviction, but by the way, it was murder.
She'd murdered
Goodness, Simon.
Back in the 1940s, I think.
Wow.
40s or 50s. Was sentenced to death, and her sentence was commuted to life imprisonment. And following her release, as quite an old lady, as I say, she went into a local supermarket in Chelmsford and stole some meat, I think it was. So when I got this brief as a very junior barrister and read through her antecedents, there it was.
Wow. Goodness gracious. That's interesting. I mean, I would. did you ever look into why she was charged with murder? Was it, I don't know.
Well, I say she'd murdered her husband.
As you do.
As you
or
do.
You I don't. Don't know if I should be saying that on this podcast, but yes, you just said it so casually.
But I think from the little information I had, these days should have been convicted of manslaughter, because I think she was in an abusive relationship with her husband. And obviously that's something we've discussed in the past as well.
Yes.
And that may well have been the reason why her sentence was commuted to life imprisonment.
Wow.
But I don't imagine there are many barristers around who have ever seen on a set of antecedents somebody who's been sentenced to death.
Yes. No, absolutely.
I should have kept a copy of it, really, but I'm not sure I'd have been entitled to it.
But as I said before, 1965 just doesn't seem that long ago in the sense that it just seems like modern times, but yet we had still had the death penalty up to 1965. But I mean, although the UK abolished the death penalty in 1965, some former colonies in the Caribbean countries, remain in the Commonwealth, still have the death penalty. Does this create tensions, do you think, between those countries and the UK?
I think it used to. Again, when I started at the bar, there was the ultimate court of appeal was the House of Lords, now the Supreme Court. But there was also this strange body called the Privy Council, the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council. And they were the same judges who constituted the House of Lords and the Privy Council. And they would hear final appeals from ex-empire countries and now Commonwealth countries, and particularly from the Caribbean. And more often than not, when you read through some of the old Privy Council cases, they were whether someone had been rightly convicted of murder, and if so, whether the death penalty was the appropriate sentence. And it always struck me as very odd, growing up as a young baby barrister, that first of all, Britain had any say whatsoever in another country's domestic legal system, but also that we were adjudicating as a country on a sentence that wasn't any longer applicable here.
That is bizarre. That in itself is totally bizarre.
It's a complete relic from the days of empire and the gradual dismantlement of the empire and the creation of the Commonwealth. But I mean, I'm talking about back in the 80s and the 90s. So again, even more recent. And as fewer countries relied on Britain for their legal system, but remained in the Commonwealth, the number of cases that were referred to the Privy Council dropped quite dramatically. And in fact, now it doesn't really exist at all as a legal body. And the hangover from the empire, whereby a British court would make a final ruling in relation to a case from Jamaica or Barbados or whatever, has now gone. And rightly so, because...
Yes, I think so.
It's rather saying, well, we know better than you. And
We don't have the practice here. We don't have the practice here. And I just think,
And it seems to me, if they choose to have the death penalty, whatever relationship we as a country have with them, it's not really any of our business. In the same way that we may disapprove of it as a country, but we still have a close relationship with the United States, who seem to execute more people for murder than any other country in the world. Certainly as far as the statistics are known about, some countries, China in particular, don't issue any statistics about their death penalty rate at all.
Yes, as does, for example, North Korea and some other countries where, you just don't know much about what goes on in their own house, if you like.
That's right. But it's the whole thing with the Privy Council was a very peculiar sort of hangover from the days of the empire. And people are astonished that it continued as long as it did.
Well, you say 80s and 90s, that's even more closer to where we are than the 1965.
Well, and it's certainly within my professional career and many others of my sort of vintage. I think it's a very good thing it stopped for the reasons I've already
referred. No, I agree.
So although there clearly must have been tensions, it was more, I think, not because we were disapproving of those countries having the death penalty, but rather they feeling put upon that we were having the final say over what they could and couldn't do.
And people's lives. People's lives were at stake. There's people making an appeal that's going to another country for them to decide, for people in their country to decide to what's going to happen with your appeal, your life, your...
Absolutely.
Whether you live or die.
And, of course, the legal system in most of those countries are based very closely on the British system.
On the common law.
As is New Zealand, Australia, a lot of African countries, and Canada, of course. So the influence of our legal system reaches far and wide, but it seems to me that each country should have its own say about whether it has the ultimate sanction of the death penalty or not.
Yes. But it's such a, it's one of those topics, Simon, I have to say, that I fight with it. I fought with it in my head when I was saying, right, let's look into this. Let's look at the ins and outs of it. And there's lots of arguments for that I think, yeah, I agree with that. And there's equally lots of arguments against that I think, oh, no, I agree with that. And I don't know how close the US or any of the countries that still practice the death penalty are to abolishing it. I mean, it does still strike me as extraordinary that it does exist in the US. That, yes. That does sort of have that feeling of shocking me now and then when you think about it. But it's an extraordinary topic, and thank you so much for having a chat with me about it today.
Well, my pleasure. I suspect, actually, the USA will get rid of it at some
point. Do you think it will be in our lifetime?
I do. President Biden is on record as saying that he wants to abolish
it. Is he?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was very much part of his manifesto when he stood against Donald Trump. Donald Trump, of course, was very much in favour of it. But Joe Biden isn't. And as you said at the start, you know, only just over half of the states still have it. Mm. And of course, it's state law that carries the death penalty. The federal law, because they have this rather strange system, you can either...
Yes, I'm still trying to work out their legal system. I'm sure I'll get there.
I had a very interesting conversation with some American lawyers in Florida a few years ago, and I still didn't understand it after that. but if you're tried in the federal courts, then certainly for the last number of years, the death penalty hasn't been available. Whereas if you're tried under state law... In the same state.
So in the same state, even if the death penalty is practiced in that state, but you're tried under federal law, they can't sentence you to a death penalty.
That's my understanding. I may be wrong,
That's a podcast in itself, Simon. We need to get the our American friends on this podcast, and then we can ask them some detailed questions and get our understanding sharpened up. That's very interesting. So, yeah. I mean, I guess for me, the next question would be, I mean, I am trying to wrap up this episode, but I've got to ask it. Who decides whether it's the federal, you're tried under federal law or whether you're tried under the state law then?
I don't know the answer to that. And that's one of the things that crossed my mind when I was talking to these Florida lawyers about it.
Maybe you have to argue to be tried under federal law rather than the state law.
I think it's a decision the police or the prosecution make as to which court they try you.
It gets more and more interesting.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
I'll have to do some more research and then we can have another conversation about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Simon, it's always a pleasure, as I said at the very beginning of this podcast, to have you. So thank you so much for your time once again.
My pleasure. Not at all.
What I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.